Main speaker for this evening, John Carnes from Beverly Hills.
Good evening, John Carnes, alcoholic. Can you guys hear me in the back? All right. Welcome to the five newcomers that stood up. You'll find hope and love here. For the three that didn't, we know who you are. We're going to see you after the meeting. Congratulations on the birthday cakes and the 90 days. That's a long time between drinks. Holy cow. You know, keep going. Kimmy did an awesome job. Thank you for talking about experience, strength, and hope. You know, that's what we're here for. And my sobriety date is March 17th, 1985. That's 11,080 days, if you're still counting. I count every day. I count every day. My home group is the Beverly Hills Men's Stag in Roxbury Park. It established January 15th, 1946. We're coming up on our 70th year. And that's where I found the giants that I try to follow. I'll tell you quickly that I qualify for this program. You know, when I first started alcohol drinking, I decided that Colt 45 shotgunned. Two or three in a row was the way that I wanted to begin my career. Halfway through that first can, I had a spiritual experience. It was amazing. And then I think I chased a guy down the street with a hammer after the second one. And after the third one, I was on the ground puking and they were hosing me off. So I overshot the mark, you know. But I had the idea of what I wanted to do. I did not want to feel the way I felt, and alcohol changed that. And if you are alcoholic like I am, you know, I wanted to not be who I was, and this stuff was amazing. I mean, it was the most amazing thing I ever found, you know. I was uncomfortable, never felt like I belonged, didn't want to be here, and now all of a sudden with this wonderful liquid, you know, I felt sexy, I felt smart, I felt I belonged, I felt bigger, badder, stronger. You might as well put an S on my chest, because that's what it did for me. Nobody around me thought that, you know, but that's what I felt. And that's, you know, my feelings have always overpowered me. You know, I would walk into a room and feel, you know, less than, and within the course of 5 or 6 minutes of drinking, man, you know, I felt I belonged. And after probably an hour of drinking, nobody wanted me there. You know, and that's the way it was. But, you know, I can tell you that on, I think it was November 11th, 1975, I overshot it, and, you know, I died of alcoholic poisoning, and they had to bring me back. So at the ripe age of 15, you know, I really had this disease bad. I didn't know what to do, you know. I didn't know what to do. So I got into other things and tried to, you know, balance that out. And didn't work out very well. Didn't get – I might have had a learning disability. I didn't like being in school. Didn't like being told what to do. Didn't like to show up. Didn't like rules. So I really, you know, didn't do very well at school. So I decided at 10th grade to drop out, got into what normal people would do is working in a machine shop, cleaning engine blocks and bead blasting and, you know, getting into race cars. And that led to a really great career. But I want to talk to you about December 24th, 1978. That was the time that my brother, who was my half-brother, who was 10 years older, had come back from Vietnam. And he was up in Sacramento and I was in Los Angeles. And he told me he was just sick and tired. And I said, well, that's okay. Come down. We'll spend Christmas together. And he says, no, I'm just sick and tired. And I had no idea what that meant. 3 days later, I found out what that meant because he had killed himself right after he talked to me. So I have a true relationship with how deadly this disease is. I mean, this is no joke, okay? This is some serious stuff. But that didn't stop me. You know, I figured, you know, I just got to figure out how to do this, you know. There's got to be a way that I can drink and it's going to work. And I tried that for another 6 or 7 years, you know. And that was, you know, March 16th, 1985, I had my last drink, and on page 152 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, in the chapter Vision for You, it talks about getting to the point where alcohol is not going to work and you're going to come to the jumping off point. And if you're here tonight and you haven't hit that spot, you might want to look at that. You know, you can get off anytime you want, but that was my moment where I wanted to blow my brains out. I couldn't find a bullet. I had the gun. So I did what any normal person would do. I went and kicked my parents' door down, threw my dad up against the wall, looked for a bullet. My mom's hysterical. And, you know, I surrendered. That moment of desperation came. I left there, and, you know, 2 days later I was in a hospital, and they brought me in this little room, and they closed the door, and they asked me if I ever wanted to hurt myself. And I said, well, yeah. You know, if you drank like I would, you'd want to hurt yourself too. You can't stop. You know, people don't want to be around you. You do incomprehensible, demoralizing things. And the guy said, hold on 1 second. I thought for sure they were going to come back with these guys with jackets and, you know, put me into a crazy house, because I thought for sure that's the only place I belonged. And they said, you know, we have a place for you. We have a bed for you. We have a program for you. And please stay. Now, up until that part, nobody wanted me to stay. Nobody wanted me around. And I felt hope. I felt, oh my God, these people might have something for me. And what they introduced me to was the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was only $12,500 back then, you know. But it was really a great introduction, because you know what? I weighed 165 pounds. I'm 6'6", 165. I hadn't eaten in a long time. My run started right in the beginning of December, so it was almost 90 days of, you know, drinking crazy amounts, partaking in crazy amounts, staying up, and, you know, doing my very best to kill myself, because I just could not stop and I didn't know what to do, you know? What can you do when you can't stop or stay stopped, you know? I could stop, but, you know, the next day, I was drinking again, you know? My best efforts led me maybe till noon, maybe till 10, maybe till 3. But no matter how sick I was the night before or that morning, I woke up and I had to do it one more time. You know, I was powerless over it. Somebody told me it was like there's an old commercial of Samsonite luggage, and they put this suitcase in this cage with a gorilla. Everybody remember that? I was a suitcase, because that gorilla, and that was alcohol, and it had my way with me. And it just kicked my derriere really bad. You know, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had 3 skills. I knew where most of the payphones were. I had a pager, and I knew how to balance a triple beam scale. Excuse me. I used to go down to the border, and I met some really fun guys. You know, that's all I knew how to do. You know, I knew how to move weight, and I knew how to do it well, and I had a money counter, you know, and these guys trusted me. They think, you know, I was 24 years old, and I had, you know, $2 million every month, you know, given to these guys down the road there. And I was scared. I was hoping they'd kill me, because I just could not stand, you know, myself anymore. I wasn't raised to be, you know, a horse thief, but it was in my genes, and I had to, you know, what do you do when all you know how to do is something bad? Thank God I came here. I found some men that had what I wanted, and I didn't want it right away, you know. When I got sober, I went to an Alano club in the South Bay, and I met her. I thought her name was Bambi. Turned out to be Mandy. We had a pretty romantic AA hostage-taking relationship, you know. If you haven't worked the steps, that will make you. You know, these relationships, oh, my God. So anyhow, it was on again, off again. And while it was off, I decided, you know, this is crazy. You know, I got into car sales. I was in this other thing. I made like $30,000 in a year. I used to make that in a week. So I decided that, you know, I needed to go back to business. So I went to Boron Federal Penitentiary, when it was still opened, and I had some friends there. And, you know, we started working on deals, and it was okay, because we were going to do all this stuff off the coast of Colombia, and we're going to Ireland and coming back through Canada, not breaking any laws in America, except I was in a federal penitentiary putting together these deals. I think they call that conspiracy. But, you know, like all these, I had a God that wanted more for me than I wanted for myself. And, you know, once again, you know, I dodged the bullet and got out of that situation. But not until I really felt what my will could bring upon my life, that incomprehensible demoralization. I felt that in sobriety, the same thing I felt when I was drinking. You know, when I just couldn't stop and my actions created so much damage, what do you do then? Holy cow, you know? When you just look in the mirror and you just say, how did you do that? How did you get to this point? You know? What is wrong with you? You know? And I found out it was my ego. You know, my ego wanted to separate me from this power greater than myself, a loving God that wanted more for me in a better way than I could ever imagine for myself, and I just couldn't say yes to that. So I found a sponsor that I really wanted what he had. He was actually, he put together the space shuttle program at Northrop. Brilliant man. I'm talking, he was brilliant. But, you know, at one time he was living under the bridges in L.A., and he took me through the steps, and, you know, we did my fourth step. And I love that. You know, I look back at that, and that was the most thorough thing I've ever done in my life. Matter of fact, I kept it. And by this time, I'd, you know, getting married, and that woman that we had that AA relationship, well, we had two kids, and when she was pregnant with our second one, she decided that she didn't want to have them because she didn't want to quit drinking. And I couldn't understand that, you know, once you came to AA, how do you drink again? You're here. Don't drink, right? It's not always the story for everybody. And she went back out, and, you know, she wanted to drink, and she wanted to have an abortion, and I just couldn't understand it. Well, she drank while she was pregnant, and, you know, he has a little, what they call that, alcohol fetal syndrome, you know? So he has a little learning disability, but, you know, by all accounts, he's a big, strapping guy, and, you know, handsome, and, but that wasn't the end of our story. So she went back out. No matter what, she wouldn't stop. So we got divorced, right? And after we were separated, my kid said, oh, that's the police station where they took us. And I said, what? And they said, yeah, you know, my mom got arrested and they took us there. So, you know, okay, we find out, you know, she blew a .28, decided not, she decided that that wasn't important to let me know about while we were separated. But, you know, that started these child custody evaluations and this and that. And, you know, she promised the counselor that she wouldn't drink again. The guy believed her. 2 years later, she drank again and ran over a couple people after having some car accidents. And, you know, she was going to jail. And she signed over custody of the kids and, you know, off she went to jail. Well, she was really somebody that does not look like they belong in jail. She was an RN. She was helped people. She was educated. You know, she did not look like somebody would be in prison. So her nice personality and all that, she got out in probably 7 months out of a year jail sentence. And she wanted the kids. And I said, you know, listen, I just got this great job opportunity. I'm moving to Atlanta. I didn't know if you knew that or not. And, you know, I'm packing up and there's a knock on the door and here's this thing come to court. And she accused me of molesting my kids and decided that wonderful four step that I did that was so important that I forgot I left behind when I moved out, that she had copied that and gave that to everybody in my family. And if she knew, you should probably give you, some of you probably still have a copy of it. And that, you know, led to this amazing process that I can really tell you that there's a part in the book where it says, we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. Okay? And, you know, what I did in my past, I can't change. I cannot change yesterday, okay? I can change my actions today. I can change how I want to act and what I want to be like. But if I go back to yesterday, make my amends to you, ask what I can do to, you know, make it right between us, shut my mouth, and do as you suggest, that's either, you know, jump off a cliff, never see me again, or, you know, pay me back the money, do this, whatever it is, you know, I'm game for it. Because my sponsor, under his direction, showed me how to do the eighth and ninth. These years later, when this thing came up, I was free of all that stuff. So I could sit there with the head of child custody service from Los Angeles County and go through my whole four-step, line by line, and say, yeah, you know what, when I was 13, that, when I was 15, yep, did that, yep. Today, I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I sponsor people, I have service, and I don't do that stuff anymore. And, you know, I was free. And today I'm free. Today I walk around free. If there's a problem with somebody, I have a solution to it. I can go take these steps. I can talk to my sponsor. I can get his direction. Because, you know, my, like I said, my thinking leads me to amazingly stupid things. You know, my first thought, holy cow, has that got me in trouble? You know? But if I share that with somebody, okay? And as my sponsor told me, his job is to direct me to a power greater than myself that I can rely on a constant basis, but I first have to establish it. And his job was to help me establish that. That I was clear that, you know, God's will, not my will. So, as I've done all these things, you know, I'd moved out of state. I got custody of the kids. She wasn't allowed to see them. And, you know, there's certain things in my life that I regret. This is one of them. I would think I'd moved to Atlanta. I was there about 3 or 4 months, and she called, and she said, John, I need to talk to you. And I said, just tell me you're dying. I hate you. And she said, you know, I have breast cancer. And if I could take those words back, you know, I would. So, you know, we had these two kids. You know, I was it for them. And I never wanted them to not love their mom. You know, their mom had disease. And this was hard because, you know, this person had wronged me. But, you know, by the men of this program, okay, not the women so much, but the men of this program. I learned how to be a parent. You know, I learned how to be a coach. I learned how to show up for my kids. I learned how to make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I learned how to do homework. I learned how to do laundry. I learned how to get up at 5:30 in the morning, do my stuff, make sure that they had their stuff, that they were always on time for school, that they were always picked up, that they were always fed, that they were always clothed, that all that stuff happened. You know? I want to let you know that when I was born, I was a big problem to my dad. He didn't want to have me, you know, and I was the reason that, you know, he was with my mom, and that, you know. So I wasn't raised in a loving house. It had nothing to do with my alcoholism. This is just how I was raised. So I didn't really have good parenting skills. But I learned from men in here how to be a great parent. So I'm learning all this stuff, and, you know, I'm still trying to let my kids have time with their mom because they don't know how much time she has. And, you know, she followed me everywhere. We went from Georgia to Idaho to Florida, and wherever I went, she was there, you know. And finally, in 2009, my daughter was in college at the time, and my son was a senior in high school. And I had had her arrested 3 or 4 times because in Florida it's called the Baker Act, and here we call it 5150. She was so drunk she wasn't able to take care of herself. And it was getting worse and worse and worse. This disease is progressive, you know. One time she's, you know, she's passed out for an hour. This next time, you know, she had a 0.45 blood alcohol. That would kill a normal person, right? Not her. So my daughter's screaming and crying at me, Dad, you got to help my mom. She's going to die. What are you going to do? Please, Dad, you know, you're sober. She's not. Help her. So I go to this hospital, pick her up after her 3-day hold. And in front of my daughter, she said, Dad, please tell mom how to stay sober. And I said, you know, listen, you can have a rich, full life in this program. All you have to do is do the thorough job on your fourth, fifth, make your amends. You know, establish your relationship with the powers you know him to be, and you'll have a great life. And, you know, she just looked at me and said, you know, how does a piece of shit like you get sober and a good person like me not? And, you know, I say that today because, you know, how many people are in their first 30 days? Okay. How many people are in their last 30 days? No hands. Somebody in here is in their last 30 days. You know, this disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. It wants you dead. Wants me dead. Wants me to absolutely, if it can't get me drunk, if it can't get me miserable, it wants me dead some other way. And it's going to make other people wrong. And it's going to do whatever it can to make sure I don't feel it's me. That I don't think that there's a solution. And that I think the world's my problem. So, you know, 90 days later, this lady texts our kids and leaves voice messages that she's killing herself, and that's what she did. But we weren't able to find her for 10 days. And I lived in Florida at the time, and she had passed out underneath the steering wheel of her car after she threw up, and the windows were up, So after 10 days, she was found. And it was horrible because it was 10 days on the nightly news. And, you know, down where I lived in Naples, Florida, kind of a small community. And, you know, my kids had to endure this. So, you know, my daughters really freaked out. And my son didn't know what to do, so he decided to join the Marines. And, you know, I understand that. You know, you want to save the world. You want to fix something. You want to feel strong. And, you know, that's what he did. And I'm very proud of him. My kids are... they're amazing. My daughter's just finishing her last year at Berkeley Law School. She's got a master's degree, and she graduated from the University of Miami. If you want to know if AA works, look at my kids' lives. Okay? Not me. But the principles that they were raised with allowed that to happen. You know? Amazing things can happen. It just takes me back for a minute because, you know, I'm so grateful. I could never thank anybody, God or anything, in words to let that occur, you know. My son, on the other hand, he didn't fall too far from the tree and has this disease. And, you know, he's been in and out of the program, but... there was a date. It was November 16th, 2011, and you know, he'd already had one deployment, and he was on his second deployment. And I got a phone call at 6:42 in the morning, and it was a Marine Corps casualty office out of Quantico, Virginia, and they told me my son had been severely injured in a bomb blast, and that they didn't think he was going to make it. And you know, it was a Wednesday, and I ended up at my Roxbury meeting, and I left that meeting and jumped on a plane, and I met him in Landstuhl, Germany. While he was there, he did code, and, you know, they brought him back. And, you know, he had lost part of his right leg, and his left leg was severely damaged, and he had, you know, TB, and, you know, the blast had put blood clots all over his body. And I spent a little over a year at Walter Reed with him there and teaching him to walk. And, you know, they pumped him full of more drugs, and he really got into the disease. And you know, I can't help my kids, but I can help somebody else's. You know, I can't help anybody in my family, but somebody else can. So all I have to do is go do these other things. So while I was there, I started helping these other things, helped write a program for the Department of Defense. Now, you got to remember, I never graduated 10th grade. Never. Okay? And I'm in the Pentagon. I've been to the White House. I've been to the Vice President's house several times for lunch. I've had meetings with generals. I wrote a program with all these people in the military, the Marines, the Air Force, the Army, and, you know, about what to do when a family comes onto a base and how they help their loved one. And, you know, the difference between a military hospital and a civilian hospital is dramatic. And how all this stuff works, and I got nothing, you know. Don't discipline me. I'm not going. I don't listen. So, you know, how all this stuff works is amazing because, you know, about 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, I got a phone call, and it was the White House, and they asked me to be flown back to the White House to be honored for my work with the families. And I'm saying this because this is crazy, you know. This does not make sense. This is, you know, A to H, you can't get there with my life. You cannot. And if you're here tonight because alcohol and anything else is having a problem in your life, please, as you said, try this program the best of your ability. Put the same amount of effort as you spent trying to get high as you do, you know, getting sober. You'll have an amazing life. You'll have successes beyond your wildest dreams. You know, I've got probably the best relationship I could ever hope for with another human being, and it's because of this program. You know, if I wasn't able to be honest with myself, if I didn't show up, if I wasn't smashing my ego on a daily basis, because my ego wants me to be better and make them wrong, if I ask, you know, what is it I can do to become closer to you today and make this right? Holy cow, you know? What an amazing thing, right? You know? So... you know, Service is a big part of my program. You know, I definitely sponsor people. I definitely go through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous with them. I definitely read it because I get way more out of it than they do. Every time I go through that book, there's something new in there. They come up with all these different sayings that weren't in there before. I didn't understand that. You know, it's a magic book. It really is. You know, they come up with solutions to life that I didn't know I needed, or that I've been looking for and didn't know it makes sense. I've had more fun than you could ever imagine. I go on trips. I've got friends all over this country. I can't believe that, you know, I've been sober 30 years, okay? I still think I'm 26, 27, you know? I really do, you know? I try to balance my life out, you know? Physical part of my life is just as important as my spiritual side. I got to take care of this body. It's the only one I have. I'm scared to death. I had a back fusion in December. Scared to death of, you know, the stuff they give, and I get off of it as quick as possible. I give it to someone to take care of me. Here, trust you with this. Don't trust me with that, you know? I do all that stuff, you know? I do the things that people told me about, you know? I don't use Listerine. I don't use Benaca. I don't do anything that has alcohol in it. I just, you know, I'm good. If somebody told somebody else that they were allergic to watermelon, people would have no problem. You tell an alcoholic they can't have alcohol, and they say, well, what about this? Well, what about that? You know? How about a little bit of this? You know? It's true. I mean, we are some crazy son of a guns. You know, but the service work is really important. You know, H&I, that can, is really important, you know? I'll tell you the difference. You know, my brother who decided to kill himself had a son. And his son didn't stand a chance. He never heard about Alcoholics Anonymous, didn't know a model. So, you know, he's in Calipatria right now doing life. You know, my kid's mom killing herself. All these people that, you know, come in here, your newcomers, where do they go? Well, some of us end up, you know, dead. Some of us end up in prisons. I wish everybody could stay. You know, I wish everybody would stay here and get this thing and find this rich, full life. But it's a disease that says you don't need them. You can do it differently. This time it'll be different. You know, I've got a sponsor now who is an amazing man. He's a professor out of UCLA. He's got 33 and three quarters years. My old sponsor just passed away. We moved out to the desert 4 years ago. And, you know, I'll tell you a funny story how I got him. His name was Rocky Hudson. I think he spoke here a few years ago. That wonderful sponsor that I had that was from the aerospace, his name was Bob Doudna. And he and I, or he sponsored me, and he sponsored another guy named David Barge, who also spoke here. And when I came back from Florida to L.A., I asked Dave to be my sponsor, and he said, you know, that'd be great, no problem. And I said, great, we can go through the steps and get to know each other. And he says, I don't do that. Here, Rocky, come here. John wants to go do this. And I said, oh, my God, that wasn't cool. I asked you to be my sponsor. And he gave me Rocky. And, oh, my God, after I think 6 or 7 weeks, we'd gone through all those steps, and for the remainder of the 2 years, I took him to every doctor's appointment, every meeting, if there was a problem, you know, I took care of Rocky. And it was like, wow, this is amazing, you know. I asked for a sponsor, and I've got this guy. And it was hard. You know, I really had a problem with it. You know, he's a wonderful man, but I'm looking, you know, not to take care of him. You know, I'd take him to the hospital, and he'd be in the hospital for 4 days, you know, and then I'd have to go take all his stuff. You know, it was like, you know, this is crazy. But anyhow, like I said, you know, we moved to the desert 4 years ago, and I thought that was a great, it was like, Rocky, you're in the desert. This is great. You know, let me know if I can help. You know, I learned a lot from him. I learned about laughing at myself. He was the king of one-liners. If he was down here, he would tell you the difference between an alcoholic and a heavy drinker is there's two of them, and they both drink, and they go down the road, and the heavy drinker gets arrested, and he says, man, I shouldn't have had that second beer. And the alcoholic says, I shouldn't have taken Pacific Coast Highway. And it's like, okay, you know, makes sense, right? Makes sense. And he was a fish out of water. If you took him outside of an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, he wouldn't know what to say. But you put him in here and he became alive. And I learned a lot from that because, you know what, I wanted to be alive outside of this. You know, I want to have a rich, full life, and he really helped me balance that. And I'm going to end a little early, but if you don't mind, I'd like to tell you the way he closed a meeting, okay? And the way he closed the meeting was it was a Catholic church, and they were having a dinner for their new priest who was from New York. So Mother Superior asked the sister to go down to the store and get some fish. So she goes down to the store, and she says, I need some fish for dinner. And the guy behind the counter says, great, I've got the best goddamn fish you've ever seen. She goes, wait a second. He goes, no, that's the name of the fish. It's the best goddamn fish you've ever had. Okay. So she gets it, and she goes back to the nunnery, and Mother Superior says, what are we having for dinner? She says, I was just at the store, and I got the best goddamn fish we're ever going to have. She goes, oh, God. Sister, you can't talk to me that way. She goes, no, that's the name of it. That's what it is. The bishop calls, says, Mother Superior, what are we having for dinner? She goes, well, looks like we're going to have the best goddamn fish we ever had. That's pretty funny, sister, but, you know, we don't talk that way. No, that's the name of the fish, Father. I'm serious. So the night of the dinner comes, and they have the fish, and at the end of the dinner, sister stands up and says, I got to admit, that was the best goddamn fish I ever had. Mother Superior gets up and says, I second it. Without a doubt, that was the very best goddamn fish I've ever had. And the bishop gets up and says, sisters, you outdid yourself. That was the best goddamn fish I ever had. The new priest from New York says, I love you fucking guys.